This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Jim Kawakami, the editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area, Tim Kawakami.
Tim Kawakami, who's covered the NBA for over two decades, and more specifically, the Golden State Warriors over the last 12 years.
This is the TK Show.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here from the home studio for the TK Show. Really, really glad to have on as my guest, frequent guest of the TK Show, friend of mine, the voice you know all too well, the broadcaster, the analyst for the Giants television, of course, Mike Kruko. Mike, how you doing today?
Good, TK. I'm pretty excited. This time of year is my favorite. I mean, we're just about ready to light up the fuse and start this baseball season.
Yeah, I know you obviously had the exhibition game at Oracle last night, had the one at the Coliseum the night before. You've been down seeing this team. It's a new team. I was there yesterday. Definitely a lot of new faces. Even the clubhouse feels a little bit different. Obviously, Bob Melvin as a manager. I know you know Bob very well. You and Dwayne know him real well. Do you have a different feel of the vibe right now of this team?
Well, it's remarkable what a few trades make. And if the right trades are made, I mean, you have to remember, the baseball players are scouts. They're scouting not only their opponents, but they're scouting their own team. When the Giants all assembled at the start of spring training, there was a curiosity and there was an anticipation. There was a curiosity as to, you know, how this team was going to fare with what they had on the field. And then there was an anticipation that there was going to be some additions to the club. And that's exactly what happened. The belief that this team had a chance at the start of spring, I'd say, was about 30%, a little lukewarm. But now, the way that they've added, the people that they've brought in, has really, really jacked up the anticipation of a good season for this club. And you can feel it. Yesterday we had the play ball luncheon, which benefits the Junior Giants program. You walked into the luncheon and you could feel it. I mean, I sat at the same table with Barry Bonds. And Barry Bonds, he doesn't have the ability to sugarcoat anything. And before I could even ask him what was it like in spring training, because he went down there as a guest instructor, he started talking about it, and he talked about how the vibe was and how this team is going to have a good year. And from Barry Bonds, that was very significant, but you could feel it. I mean, just in the conversations I had with the players on the field and with Bob Melvin and Matt Williams and Brian Price, the pitching coach, you know, they're the old schoolers. I mean, they're a little reluctant to just go out there and just, you know, and get that enthusiastic, but I think they were having a hard time suppressing what's actually happening on the field. And what's happening on the field is they have a good vibe and they think they can win.
We were talking a little bit yesterday, I think, just chatting, you and I, and you mentioned, I think, one word that really hit me: defense. Do you think that's where maybe the most notable kind of upgrade or the noticeable thing that fans will just kind of, hey, watching every day, this defense is different?
Oh, no question. I mean, they were horrible last year, and they were the worst defensive team in baseball. And, you know, they didn't really hit that great either. I mean, and despite all that, they went into the last 10 days of the season still alive for the playoffs, and they wound up four games under 500. But when you think about the fact that they weren't a good defensive team and you know, they didn't especially swing the bats that well, it's kind of remarkable how they finished. But with the acquisition of Jung-Hoo Lee, I mean, you should watch this guy. And nobody knows about this guy yet. Mm-hmm. But his ability to run routes in center field is precise. It's a direct line from first step to where he catches the ball. Very, very efficient outfielder. Very, very good outfielder. And then Matt Chapman is a very he's a storied defender. But what sets him apart, aside from quick feet, is range. He plays one of the deepest third base positions in all of baseball. But his strength is charging the ball. He made a play yesterday that hit off of Spencer Howard, the starting pitcher, hit off his arm mm-hmm. and carried him to third base. And, I mean, his ball was hit 103 miles per hour, and it wound up taking Howard out of the game. But the ball caromed over to third base, and I didn't think anybody had a chance at a play. And Chapman comes in and makes that play and wasn't even close. So I do think that these guys are instrumental. You have a captain in the outfield now. You've got a captain in the infield. And with the defense that we've seen from Patrick Bailey, I think this team really has the ability to stay in a lot of games with pitching and defense. And I think that's significant if you're going to have a good season.
You know, the kind of the morale of the fan base kind of goes up and down. And you had the championships, and then there's been some amount of lull since then. And, you know, Buster retires and Brandon Crawford leaves the team. I know you've got a sense for the fan base, obviously. Do you think this is an important, you know, first of all, getting these new guys was important just for the morale of the fan base, just for the mood around the team? And how important is just the production on the field to getting that energy back to Oracle Park, to making it feel like the Giants again?
Well, winning is everything. And when the Giants acquired Farhan Zaidi as their president of baseball ops, we all anticipated that it was going to be a step in the right direction. And we were anticipating that he was going to be able to bring winning back into to the Giants culture. It took him a little longer. I mean, I say that despite the fact that he put together the team in 2021 that won 107 games, an all-time win record for the franchise, which is going into its 142nd year. That's a significant contribution. But in regards to bringing in high-priced free agents, I don't think they were really ready for it. I mean, there was, you know, you've got to have complementary players if you're going to bring in a Matt Chapman or a Jorge Soler or a Jung-Hoo Lee or a Blake Snell. I mean, you can't just throw these guys out there if the surrounding cast is not strong enough, is not talented enough, and expect it all to mesh. It just doesn't work that way. And I think this is really, since he's been here in regards to Farhan Zaidi, I think this is the very first year that he really was in position to go out and spend some money and bring in some high-priced free agents to complement the team. And the results have been dramatic just in the attitude of the players in the clubhouse and on the field. I mean, immediately everybody, and that includes all the free agents coming in seeing what's there at camp, everybody, their expectations all of a sudden started to soar. It was really great. I mean, you know, I didn't go down to spring training. My partner, Dwayne Kuiper, made four trips down there. And one of the trips he came back, he said, I had a great conversation with Matt Chapman. This is right after Chapman had joined the club. He'd been there for like 4 or 5 days. And he asked him, what has impressed you most? Kipe asked Chapman, what impressed you most about what you've seen in the Giants organization? And without hesitation, Chapman goes, the young arms. Hmm. We got some young arms in this organization. And that is one of those things that gives everybody a deep confidence in the organization, because you know, in order to contend, you better have some depth when you start talking about arms. So, you know, it's the addition of the free agents. It's the attitude of the free agents after they've been here and they've seen what's available has led everybody to believe that, you know, they're going to contend for a playoff spot. And that's something that you feel, and we felt it yesterday at the luncheon.
Woody, you're such a keen observer of pitching, of starting pitching. We're watching Harrison, you know, a young guy, still very young, finished the season last as a starter, got, what, 5-6 starts. Do you think he plugs right in as a sure kind of number three middle rotation guy? What are you expecting from Kyle Harrison this year?
Well, he's actually going to pitch game two down in San Diego at the start of the season. So it's going to start off with Logan Webb, then Kyle Harrison, and then it's going to be Jordan Hicks. Kyle Harrison, I think, is of those three starters that are going to start it off, I think he's the best or the biggest question mark. Because he's young, he's still raw in certain areas. I don't think he has exceptional command. He's got great stuff, and he's got deception in his delivery. But primarily, I mean, he's been a two-pitch pitcher. He's working on a changeup, which is, you know, he's getting more confident with it. But, you know, the Giants open up. You know, they've got four against San Diego, three against L.A., three against San Diego. Their first 10 games, you know, you need to show up. You need to be good. And I think that, you know, Harrison can be very effective because of his deception. But I don't expect him to go deep in a game his first couple starts. I mean, I still think he's putting his act together. And if they could, you know, get four or five or six innings out of him, that'd be a great contribution. So I do think they're a little young, a little bit in the rotation. And the first time through this first series, their fourth and fifth starters have yet to be announced.
Yeah.
Giants are waiting for Alex Cobb, who's getting closer, coming back from a labrum tear repair that he had in his hip. And then Blake Snell, of course, and we expect that he'll be pitching one of those games in the first 10, but we don't know. But so there's a little bit of some question mark with Harrison and the four fifth spots in the rotation right now. But I'll tell you the one thing, though, that we saw over the weekend, Jordan Hicks is ready to have a big year. His last outing against the A's was spectacular, and he showed a real true command of two fastballs, a lot of two-seam fastballs, but which he was very consistent down around the knees with, and he had great movement, had a lot of swing overs, meaning guys, and he's throwing that sinker, had so much late movement that guys are swinging over the top of it. And then he would elevate the four-seamer above the belt across the letters, which that's what you're supposed to do. Change sight lines with that fastball. And he showed great ability to exercise both those pitches. And then his slider was lights out. His split was lights out. And then he had another breaking ball that he was backing off speeds with. So he showed three good speeds. And he showed an excellent command of all of his pitches. So I'm really excited about him. And, you know, it's just little things like this. You know, guys who have been in this game a while, have been labeled. And, you know, when baseball, when you get labeled, it's hard to change that. But I think we're watching a guy, Jordan Hicks, really redefine his label. And to me, that's exciting.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, there's just not that many guys with like kind of back end reliever starts of their careers, or, you know, he certainly had some injuries and some ups and downs who you see move to the starting rotation. But you know who I was thinking of, and I had to bring this up with you. I remember Scott Gerelts did that, right? That was kind of Gerelts' career path with those like early 80s Dodgers. I don't know if that's a comparison that you can make or you think, but I just can't think of many other guys who did, at least did it successfully, to kind of go from one of those late inning, one inning guys, not even one inning, you know, go strike out two guys to go in the starting rotation and go try to get some bulk innings. We'll see how many innings Hicks can pile up. Do you have any comparisons? Have you seen this before?
Well, I think that's a great analogy with Scott Gerelts. And yeah, I have seen it several times throughout the years. but I love the fact that with Hicks, he started out in the bullpen and he became a closer. And the one thing you learn when you do that is that you learn how to pitch one inning. You learn how to take on the one inning assignment. And basically, you know, you don't hold anything back. I once asked Scott Gorelis, I go, how do you warm up to come into a game as you know, coming out of the bullpen? He goes, oh, easy. I just get down there and I get on the mound. I start throwing the crap out of the ball as hard as I can. You know, as a starter, you kind of ease into a couple throws, move back a little bit. You got all the time in the world. But as a reliever, it's red alert. It's game on, especially if you're a late inning guy. And when Gorelis made the transition into the starting rotation, he took that mentality. And every inning that he pitched as a starter, in his mind, it was that ninth inning. And I think that Hicks does the same thing. You know, he comes ready to pitch. He knows the importance of strike one. He's in the attack mode. And now he's finessing a little more because he's showing other pitches and other movements and other speeds. Whereas a late inning guy, you didn't have to. You just went at guys with power. You know, he got in the big leagues. He's 21 years old. Well, he's 27 years old now. He's a 6-year veteran. Well, he's learned a lot of things, but you can definitely see the mentality of a late inning reliever when he takes the mound. And I think it has served him well, and I think it will continue to do so as a starter.
Were you ever a reliever, Kruger? I mean, imagine they just looked and said, this guy's going to go bulk innings. Did you ever get even before you got to the majors, did you ever do some relief?
No, not a lot. I out of necessity a couple times I got one save in the big leagues. And the day before I pitched in Philadelphia and I had lost the game. I think I went around six innings in that outing. So the next day, I mean, the bullpen was all chewed up and it's just one by one. Here they go. They keep chipping away. And Danny Ozark comes to me and goes, look, if I need you, can you get me an out or something? I said, yeah, sure. So I, you know, hopped down there in the bullpen and, you know, adrenaline does amazing things. I was stiff, but, you know, a couple throws, I think I could get loose. Well, sure enough, Menton goes down, Lavelle goes down, and all of a sudden he comes out with two outs in the ninth inning, and he comes out and he goes to the pen, and I come walking in there, right? Well, I look around, and I realize that, you know what? I could get another loss. This is my game. So that'd be great, get two losses in 2 days, wouldn't it? Oh, my God. Anyway, I'm pitching six to Lescano, and four sliders later, he hits a ground ball to John LeMaster, game over. But, I mean, I just didn't have that many opportunities. You know, later in my career, like towards the very end, there were a couple times when I would come in. I had been struggling, and then they, you know, kind of hid me in the pen for a while. But, you know, really after a couple of times in the pen, I was right back in the rotation. So I pitched for 17 years professionally, and for the most time, I was in the rotation. I didn't have a lot of experience. And you know what? I wished now that it could have been a bit different. I wished I could have learned the importance of the one-inning assignment, and I think I would have approached things a bit differently in developing as a starter had I been able to go in there and pitch a little more relief, one-inning outings.
You know, Melvin talked about this a little bit yesterday, and maybe he's mentioned it before, and you can just feel, you know, Logan Webb kind of is the leader in that clubhouse, obviously, from what he's done, just his personality. And Melvin said, you don't normally get a starting pitcher to kind of set the tone in a clubhouse. I think you might have, and there's been other times, you know, maybe Bumgarner sometimes, Kane and Bumgarner, or that kind of thing, other times in the Giants clubhouse, but there's just not that many times I can think of. Usually it's position players are playing every day. I know Buster clearly was the tone setter in there for sure. Is it a little different? Do you agree Logan Webb kind of sets a tone in there, and is it a little different for a starting pitcher who's only pitching once every five games to kind of be that leader?
He wants to be. He's learning how to do it. It's hard to be a leader as a pitcher when you're out there every fifth day. It's one of the reasons I don't believe a pitcher should win the MVP award simply because you're not out there enough. I think that's an award that should come for a player. But, you know, when we were playing with Roger Craig and we were the so-called leaders of the clubhouse, a lot of pitchers, Rick Rushel and Dave Dravecki and Mike Lacoste and myself. But it was kind of a collective. And, you know, we had young players. You know, we had Robbie Thompson and Will Clark and Matt Williams and and Kevin Mitchell and Bob Melvin. And, you know, we were a young team. So I think a lot of the protocol of the clubhouse and you know, just how to act on the road in a plane, in a bus, around the hotel, that was the responsibility of us pitchers. So, you know, a leader can really come in many different ways. And I think that, you know, Logan Webb has assumed that role because of the success on the field. However, I mean, he's still a young guy and he has no problem, you know, moving aside for somebody else who's got more time in the game, like a Matt Chapman or a Blake Snell. I mean, and that really is what makes for a healthy clubhouse. When you have respect for your teammates to where they have a voice, regardless of age, but because of their experience, and it sells in the clubhouse, I mean, that's a healthy clubhouse. So I do believe that Logan Webb indeed is a leader in that clubhouse, despite being a tender 25 years old.
Just, Mike, in your time around the game, in the clubhouses, who was the best kind of clubhouse leader you ever were around?
Bob Brindley was exceptional. In Chicago, Rick Rushel was really good. George Mitterwall was really good. Bill Buckner was really good. When I got to Philadelphia, I mean, they had a real experienced team. They had an old team. Pete Rose was the captain. He was the guy. Mike Schmidt, definite leader. Steve Carlton, who never, ever spoke to any opponent. And when I lockered next to him when I was with the Phillies, he would never shut up. But Sparky Lyle was on that team, Tug McGraw. I mean, they just were, Gary Maddox was another guy who was a leader. They really had a great team because of the respect they had for one another. And at various times during the course of the year, you know, you would hear comments and inspirational speeches come from any one of them, which really made for a healthy clubhouse. But it's important. You've got to have one. And that's one of the things that Bob Melvin was adamant about. He really wanted to get Matt Chapman for that very reason, and we've seen it already from Chapman.
What's the Bob Melvin feel? I mean, I know it's early on, but you know him so well. You've been around him when he's been managing other teams. What does he bring to the Giants?
Accountability, number one. You know, he expects you to do your job. He expects you to act like a big leaguer, both on and off the field. Bob came over when Roger Craig came over to the Giants from the Tigers back in 86. Roger came in September of 85, but Roger, he told us that when we were talking, and Roger was a pitcher, I was a pitcher, and naturally you want to know about young catchers, especially one that Roger had some familiarity with. And Roger said, this guy's going to be a manager of the big leagues. You're going to like this guy. He misses nothing. And one of the things that he was that way. I mean, he would ask a question and he'd want to know why. You know, why did you shake me off? Why did you not want to throw that pitch there? With Roger, that was his whole deal. You better have a responsible answer when he asked you why you threw that pitch. What was the situation? But we always had one, of course. But with Melvin, I mean, he was a catcher, a rookie doing it. And that I'd never seen before. And so he has the same characteristics, personality traits of Roger Craig. I see a lot of Roger in him because he has no problem, you know, getting right up to you in the middle of a game. And there was an incident with Wade Meckler recently and he had it in spring training where Meckler's going to be a player in the big leagues. I mean, he's going to be a good hitter. It was a 2-0 count. The Giants were down. And they were down a couple, 2-3 runs. Anyway, in the 2-0 count, Meckler, who's not a home run hitter, he swings at the 2-0 pitch. Mm-hmm. It's a new double play. Mm-hmm. Got back to the bench, and Melvin said, why'd you do that? He goes, why the 2-0 pitch? I mean, last year, in the previous 4 years, every hitter had that ability to swing at any pitch at any time, which included a 3-0 pitch. But with Melvin, given the situation down by three runs, it was more important to keep the line moving. And in a 2-0 count for a hitter like Meckler, who's a contact guy, it was a great opportunity for him to take a pitch, try and work a walk, get your butt on base. So at that moment, Wade Meckler learned a lot about baseball. And this is a conversation that Melvin had with Meckler in the middle of a game. It's the other thing, too. You know, he's not going to wait around for after the game. If there's something that he sees that needs to be addressed, He's going to do it right there. And he'll do it in front of everybody. Because when you do it in front of everybody, it's like, disciplining your child in front of their siblings. You not only discipline one child, you discipline them all. Well, it was the same thing that Roger did. He always made his corrections to the person in front of everybody. So we all got the point. And Bob Melvin does the same thing. And I think that has served him well. And I think it will continue to serve him well on this team.
You know, there's so much talk, clearly logical, about the Dodgers offseason. They get Ohtani, they get Yamamoto, they get Glasnow. They are loaded with studs, and they weren't lacking them last season either. But man, I do this show North and South with Dylan Hernandez, talk about the Dodgers all the time, and there's still some weaknesses there. I'm not, egging you on here, but do you think the Dodgers thing could be pretty vulnerable, maybe more vulnerable than we've been talking all offseason? Who's their starting pitching? Mookie Betts has got to play shortstop. I still have some questions about this team. What do you think?
Well, one of the things that was weird about spring training is that the Giants weren't on TV a lot. So I didn't go to spring training. So I'm watching at home and starving for more games with the Giants. And the Dodgers and the Angels, they were on, they broadcast every game. So I saw a lot of Dodger games. I know the top of their lineup is as good as you could possibly be with Betts and Freeman and Ohtani. They clearly won the offseason. They spent a lot of money to do that. I think that, like any other team, there's warts. Guys have to have good jobs. Guys have to stay healthy. I mean, that's the nature of baseball. They may have won the offseason, but we saw the Padres the previous year win the offseason, and they didn't even get to the playoffs last year. So, along the way, you as a general manager and a president of a club, you put together a club based on stats and intuition and age and ability. You take on all those considerations and then you pull the trigger, but you still have to have a team that finds chemistry. You still have to do it on the field. You still have to stay healthy. So, every team has a vulnerability, even a team that's so clearly won the offseason like the Dodgers. So you got to play them.
I was out there last night. I would say, a new PA announcer. I don't want to ask you anything you can't answer, but Rennell was such a big part of this franchise for so many years. What's your thoughts on her not being with the team anymore? And did you feel it a little bit yesterday?
I really, really thought the world of Rennell. I just think she's incredibly talented and just not afraid. She was so good at her job. I liked her as a disc jockey, listening to her on the radio because she had some fire in her belly. And then when she came over to the Giants, when the club opened their new ballpark in 2000, she brought a coolness to the PA that I'd never seen before. She did it in her own style. And she was always up front. She was, she was really good in the community. Whatever fundraiser was needed and needed an MC, she stepped right up. She was so good. And she was fun. She had a little dirt under her fingernails. You could have a good, interesting conversation. She fit right in. We all adored her. And I don't really know what happened. I know that she's missed. And yesterday it was a bit strange. I just wish her well. She's I think she has a lot left in her career where she will distinguish herself as she did here for 24 years. She was here longer than Willie Mays was a Giant. San Francisco. Yep. That's quite remarkable. But she had a brilliant career, and they're going to name the booth after her, and she really will be a forever Giant. And God love her. I wish her nothing but the best.
All right, Krug, I will end this episode with a version of a question I ask all my guests. And with you, I would take particular interest because your book taste is so similar to mine. It's probably a little bit better than mine, but it is so excellent. I don't want to put extra pressure on you here, Mike, but what's your favorite book these days?
Well, I've had some really good – Gentleman in Moscow, or from Moscow, Gentleman in Moscow. I really enjoyed that book. That was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I guess they're going to make it a short series with Ewan McGregor being the main character. Just a fabulous book. I loved it. I'm reading right now. I just finished The Hunter by Tana French. She's a great writer. She writes about Ireland and the characters in Ireland. But this particular two book, I think she's going to write a sequel to it. I think it's going to be a third book. But it's a story about this guy, Cal Hooper, who was a detective in Chicago and retires. And he just goes to Ireland. He looks for a place to live and he buys a house there. And then he's in this small community. And she's so good at weaving personalities and their vernacular. And, you know, you really get the feel that when you're reading this book, you're like standing in the room as these dialogues are going and they're having a meeting amongst the town members in the pub. And it's just a fabulous book. And so I enjoyed that. And then, I don't know, I mean, we discussed Wilbur Smith before, his Courtney series and the River God series. I mean, they're just too good. I recommend Wilbur Smith books and Towner French books right now. That's what I'm on.
All right, Krug. Tremendous. I've not read those. I am going to. You turned me on to Joe I, the IQ series, and it was so perfect for me. And I will continue to be reading the Kruko Book Club.
I'm a member. Reference. What do you got for me?
You know, I haven't read anything great recently. The Slow Horses series, everybody's read them. They're a famous TV show now. But the Slow Horses, have you read that series, Krug?
No, I haven't read them. I saw all the what has it, 3 years they've had with it? I love the show. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think they're doing another season. I have not watched much of the show. I know it's really good. I just love the novel so much, which is a good sign, right? Like, I really like the novels, and I just kind of want to keep reading the novels. Mick Herron, really intricately done, obviously well done on the television, some great actors. But that's the series, I think, the one that I've really like. I just want to keep returning to, and I think they've said it's over. The series is over, and then another book came out on the series out of demand, just because it's such a compelling group of characters, a compelling, you know, structure of them. So that's the series. I bought Three Body Problem. You know, they got the new Netflix series. I hear it's an interesting novel, so I bought that. I think that's my next kind of thing to read. It's a little science fiction-y or very science fiction-y, but that might be the next one if that author really starts getting me. I think that might be my next series, but I'm looking. I'm always looking. The IQ series has kind of fizzled out a little bit, Krug, but it's the first three were incredible.
Yeah, they were good ones, and I'm glad you enjoyed them. But hey, I am definitely going to do the Slow Horses. I'll be on that next.
I think you'll like that one. All right, Krug, I've taken plenty of your time. I'm sure I'll see you at the ballpark soon. Thanks so much for being on, as always.
Well, thanks for having me, TK, and let's have a good baseball year. What do you say?
Absolutely. All right, Krug, everybody, it's Mike Kruger on TK Show. Thanks, everybody.